Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, it's like how stalactites are made, I guess.
Yeah.
Just kind of get all that all over your skin and it does the same. I don't know about this, but whatever. Whatever, it's kind of
neat. A walker
neat.
Is hanging from a ceiling trying to bite your head, it's a stalactite. And if it's a walker is crawling on its knees trying to bite your feet, it's a stalagmite.
Yeah, that's how I remember him. Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead, the ones who live on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking episode 5, Become. At this point, I don't know whether to introduce it as season 1, episode 5, because things are looking grim as far as the prospects of getting this whole thing done by the end of this mini-series here. But we'll see. We'll see. Aaron, what'd you think of Become?
Well, like a lot of the ones who live, I like a lot of the stuff in isolation, and I don't know. There's like I said, there's a lot of stuff I like in isolation. It's just becoming clear to me that I don't think we're going to get an end to this story. Like, there's a lot of ways I thought this would end in terms of like getting back to Alexandria or not getting back to Alexandria, who lives, who dies, what story. But like there, I just can't. There's no way. In one single episode, even if it's like an hour and a half, super long episode, you're going to get Rick back, get into Echelon briefing, like which this already is straining my credibility that this super secretive organization is going to take a guy with Rick's pass back under these unusual circumstances and just like, all right, he's ready for the Echelon briefing. And then just roll up the CRM because you're just going to get the dirt under files and run to the Pittsburgh Times or I'm sorry, the Philadelphia Times and be like, look at what they're doing on your behalf. Overthrow the militarized, the true leaders, the puppet masters of your kingdom. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. It's got the flashbacks. This is Gimple-rific. What do you think?
Hey, Ron, I am shocked. I am just completely shocked that you're even lukewarm on any part of this episode. I mean, I look at this episode and I see the Matthew Negrete special. He comes in, he writes his Pumbaa and Timon shit dialogue, just like bottom barrel, scrape it off the floor, the heel of your boot kind of dialogue, and I don't know, tops it with a character that I could not give two shits about. Like, I don't care if you redeem her or throw her off a skyscraper, I just don't want to watch an episode about Jadis ever. And so to try to, like, as episode 5, as the penultimate episode of a series that is supposedly about Rick and Michonne, to try and redeem her is just stupid. It's just stupid. I hated every second of this episode. It was physically hard to watch this episode for me. There were several times where I just wanted to say, I wonder if people would forgive me if I didn't finish this episode. If I just came to the podcast and said, I'm sorry, I couldn't watch this episode. It was so bad.
But then you would skip the payoff of Jadis being killed.
That's the one redeeming quality about this is I never have to No. I probably will have to deal with her in flashbacks. We'll come back in season 2 and it'll be the Michonne, Rick, and Gabriel show. And Gabriel will constantly be flashing back to Jadis. Maybe I could have done more with her. Maybe she didn't have to die. Fuck Jadis. She's been terrible from the beginning and she's just gotten worse as it's gone on.
Well, there you go. strong words from Jim Jones.
I can't tell you how much I hated this. I haven't hated an episode of television this much in a long time.
Well, all right. I was going to tease some other things out. Let's talk about the titles before we just rip it in this episode. Like so much rebar. So the first five episodes of this season, which might end up be having more seasons, I see as the alpha and the omega of the Rick and Michonne story. The first three titles are Years Gone By. This is a play on Days Gone By, which is the pilot episode of The Walking Dead. I think it's the name of the collectively the first trade paperback graphic novel series that collects all the first, like, I think, eight issues. And this is Rick's obviously first appearance. And then the episode 4 and 5 are called What We and Become, which is a reference to season 10, episode 13, What We've Become. And that was the episode that Michonne pieced out on the series, where she met Virgil and learned about him. Yeah. And yeah, she took off. So this is kind of like the beginning and the end of the Rick and Michonne storyline. And obviously this is a continuation. That's kind of nifty. But yeah, like I said, the things I liked about this is I think Rick and Michonne, the idea of Rick and Michonne getting kind of like this honeymoon where there's driving across America, seeing, Yellowstone, the national parks, and they're having a romantic cabin retreat where Rick's presenting her with jewelry and they're drinking some nice alcohol. I don't know. I thought that stuff was all pretty nice. And they're doing, like, I kind of like what they're hinting with, like, Michonne's, like, a slightly altered Rick philosophy that she's taking going forward. And I don't know how that will manifest or develop, because again, I can't imagine they're going to do more Rick and Michonne stuff, but I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, there's an awful lot of Jadis.
More about Jadis than it is about Rick and Michonne is the weird thing.
And I think I took a shine to Anne. I don't think you ever really got over her trash compactor lifestyle. No. So I liked a little bit her dance with Father Gabriel and kind of that morale, but they're trying to give Jadis a moment at the end of this episode. And it's even funny because, like, even the writer's like, no, you don't get to have your moment. You know, Michonne just comes in there and pisses all over it at the end. I thought that was pretty funny too. She's dying with everything that she's tried to do in flames. You really hated this episode.
I did. Yeah. I think even in a scene where I understand what they're going for, the dialogue just holds it back. I mean, I've got a couple examples that I'll quote when we get to the scenes, but I mean, I don't know. It's dialogue I wouldn't put in a fourth grader show. It's just so bad. It's this confusing shit that they've been doing the entire run of The Walking Dead, where it's like they want to talk around concepts and use cute terms and, like, have these almost lyrical turns of phrase in their dialogue, and they overuse them so much that it ends up just coming across as, like, gaga goo goo shit. Like, we're not them. Well, we ain't them. That shit was bad when they did it twice in an episode. Here they're doing it all episode long, and it's terrible. Gabriel's getting in on it. It's ridiculous.
Well, do we have any other non-spoiler things we want to talk about, or should we jump into the episode proper?
Yeah, let's do it.
Don't shamble away. We'll be right back.
We try to make it super easy to support Making Podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. The Hungry Ones will feast. We're back with The Watching Dead. All right, let's start the autopsy here. We have a very brief scene. Cold open of Father Gabriel walking alone through the forest, seeing a helicopter, looking up, saying the Lord's Prayer. This is just just to let us know that, hey, Father Gabriel's in this one. And then we get the credit sequence.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, I guess, a big moment for Walking Dead fans because, another character we know from The Walking Dead.
Which, hey, sure, I always like seeing Seth Gillum, Sergeant Carver back. Rick and Michonne have a little honeymoon in Yellowstone Park. They do some sightseeing, buy some souvenirs in the visitor center, and discover the keys to a lover's cabin.
They are just falling backwards into good luck here. A huge stash of noodles, tasteful nudes, that they find along the road. They get cold drinks. Well, okay, they're not cold anymore, but they were cold at one point. And then they find this cabin, and it seems like their luck is really just not going to end, right?
Yeah, I like this scene. We talk about the yellow truck, which is already stupid lucky, although I guess it's unlucky in the grand scheme of things. And I don't know. I saw some people saying that they thought the tasteful nudes was too much, like too much good fortune. I don't know.
I get it.
You get this little, it looks like, to me, it's like this little startup that's trying to get a noodle company going, you know, in the digital age. Doing some manual fulfillment of orders, getting the local bodega stocked up, and then the world ended. So it's like, yeah, every once in a while you're gonna, you know, in the 8, 9, 10 years of running around in the apocalypse, you're gonna get some scores.
Yeah, I think what people are referring to is just the compounding good luck, right? The beverages and the food and the truck with the batteries that can get them across the fucking country and all the fuel in it. Like everybody who's saying like it's too much luck is talking about the previous episode as well. And I tend to agree. That's a lot of luck, man.
Yeah. I like the scene of them eating their noodles and drinking their beverages in front of the Wyoming mural. You know, it's kind of like, I guess, foreshadowing what they're going to be getting into. I also want to renew and amplify Michonne's complaint about these license plate souvenirs.
Oh yeah, me too.
It's rare to find an Aaron one, and when I do, it's not spelled the way my name is. It's got too many A's. I just got one A, one R, one O, one N. I'm certain Michonne has never seen. And then you got fucking Rick over here.
Like, oh yeah, his is everywhere.
Yeah, and not only that, but the variations. You'll have Rick, Richard, Dick. Like you all have these license plates for your particular flavor of Richard. But Aaron and Michonne can't get one fucking plate between the two of them. Jesus.
Yeah, no, I always had that problem too. There was no way anybody's gonna have my name. You'd think they'd have Jim somewhere on there, but
right,
nope.
Right. Nope. Just really, really hate it.
I will say this shouldn't be a moment. Like they didn't even clear this place. Like if you watch them, they walk in, Rick pops his head through one of the doorways, and like, no, that's good. And then they walk over and start, you know, picking up license plates and reading logbooks and stuff. And I'm like, guys, doors and corners. Come on, Rick, you know how to do this. They don't clear it at all.
If there's one thing the show doesn't do, it's stealth zombies. And certainly not in this episode.
Of course, yeah.
So Rick and Michonne know that as long as there's no snarling and shuffling, they're going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
I did like his trick, you know, like they did the callback to the spearmint baking soda toothpaste, which, if you recall, that's a season six, episode 10 reference to the time that Rick and Michonne kind of officially started dating. You know, the Rick was interested in her and Carl had been talking to her and she was asking for toothpaste. So he was hell bent on finding it. And here he is years later finding it. I thought that was cute.
Sure.
I like how he repurposed the Michelle necklace to just be a gold M for her. I thought that was pretty cute. Good idea. Rick's looking for his moment, as she says.
I'll say it's bonkers how this Michelle thing is mounted. Like, it's mounted from the top of the M. So if you're wearing this necklace, like, the whole thing would just flop right down, right? So the Michelle would be, like, almost vertical. Not quite.
I think they have those. Like, that might be a style where you have your whole name hanging off. It's not from the middle. It's kind of like, you know, dangling. But
okay.
I did.
It works for the M.
I did think that maybe they had cheated a little bit. They needed a scene of Rick somehow drilling a small hole through the end so he could remount it or something.
They really cheated because in the wide shot, it's mounted from both ends. It's like the M and the E.
Oh, so it's
on
a
both
plate.
Ends. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's easy.
But in the close up, it's not. It's just mounted from the M. So whatever.
Oh, well, if it's mounted both ends and you just snap one end, you open up the loop and you put it. Yeah, that's a lot easier to explain.
Well, it's not what he does, but yeah, it's whatever. It's small continuity issues. No stranger to The Walking Dead.
They're walking through they're trying to find her cabin, and they're going past these natural wonders. We're seeing geysers. We're seeing, you know, very beautiful natural park type stuff. And Michonne sees a park sign about protecting people that gets her gears turning. And then they get to put that principle in practice when they find a small group of survivors struggling to take out some walkers. Got a new zombie type, Jim.
Uh-huh. Stone skin walkers.
Calcified zombies. They've wandered into a steam vent. They've got layers of calcium carbonate or whatever the hell that cave shit is made out of, and it's like their head and shoulders covered in cement.
Yeah, it's like how stalactites are made, I guess.
Yeah.
Just kind of get all that all over your skin and it does the same. I don't know about this, but whatever. Whatever, it's kind of
neat. Walker
neat.
Is hanging from a ceiling trying to bite your head, it's a stalactite. And if it's a walker is crawling on its knees trying to bite your feet, it's a stalagmite.
Yeah, that's how I remember him. I had some real objections. This is where my real objections with the episode start happening.
Yeah.
Rick, they're walking along this path to the cabin, and Rick stops Michonne and turns to her and says, "I just want to let you know, I never let go." Bullshit, dude. An episode ago, you were openly weeping and talking about how you died twice because you let them go and you couldn't handle it if you had to die again. Like, bullshit. This line is complete horseshit. No chance that he ever felt this way.
Yeah, I mean, you could charitably retcon it by saying that he thought he let them go, but obviously the proof that he's with Michonne and didn't pull the ERB is proof that he hadn't let go, but it does contradict direct statements he made, you know.
Yeah, it contradicts everything we've seen up until now, and it's now that he's back with Michonne and he's feeling all good and they're having their luck eating ramen noodles that he's like, oh yeah, I'd never let go. He's just retconning his emotions here. It's stupid.
It'd been better if he had been like, yeah, I completely let go and I was completely lost and you found me and you brought me back.
Yeah,
you know?
Thank
but
her
this,
for it.
Yeah.
Not say, yeah, that's the thing you did for me. Yeah, it wasn't actually a thing because I never let go.
Uh-huh. Now that I've got some noodles in me, I gotta say, I want to take all that stuff back about giving up on you and not remembering Carl's face and stopping right? dreaming about you and just, yeah.
Christ.
I looked into it. So apparently this plaque that they find that's outside the ranger's cabin, protect the park from the people from the park, and the people from the people, is something of the park ranger's creed. I can't find any evidence of it printed on signs, but there's a lot of things in like their guidebooks and whatnot that kind of has this as a guiding principle for the ranger service. So
what about protecting the park from the park?
Wow. How do you
do
that?
It's the only thing that's absent there. Protect the park from the park.
It's like the Yellowstone super volcano is about to blow off, and the Rangers just hold hands and Captain Planet it.
Sure.
Like,
or they clear out the underbrush so there won't be as many fires. I don't know. Protect the park from the park. That's what I say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're duty bound to let natural events take their natural course.
Oh, okay.
So the park rises against itself. They have to, it's like a civil war. They have to maintain neutrality. If the bears and the wolves start rumbling, they can't. What are you going to do? Yeah. Take sides in that? Got to let them work
Fair.
It out.
I wouldn't.
So yeah, these people are real dumb idiots. They're no threat to Rick and Michonne. Rick and Michonne never take them as serious threats. They give them their nudes. They try to leave. They backstab and say they want everything. And instead, they get their shit beat up, their balls kicked, and guns in their faces. And they're secure. I don't know. This feels like Michonne pulling a Pulp Fiction where she's like, you know, I'm trying to be the shepherd here, Ringo. Like, just promise me you're not gonna hurt any people, and we'll let you. I just need you to. I know. I don't even need to believe it. I just need to hear you say the words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, I mean, you know, that's not gonna happen, right? I mean, they should have known it wasn't gonna happen based on his demeanor. He can't even really comprehend this conversation, let alone the fact that they're letting him go and that he might have to hold to his word here. There's no chance.
Even while Michonne's explaining, I just need to hear you say you promise not to hurt people. He's like, well, that's not how it works out there.
Right.
If you just got to care about your own. And so, you know, obviously this will kind of bite them in the ass. Definitely bite the three really, people, the sister and the two men's ass. Oh, no, they definitely get their ass bit.
They do, yeah. I thought you meant Rick and Michonne, because it works out should've all kept, fine for Rick and Michonne.
Should have kept their promise. I was pleased to note in this scene that Rick has my exact same backpack. He's wearing a Gregory Baltoro, maybe a 75. I've got the slightly larger 85, but yeah.
Oh, Rick can't handle an 80.
Well, you know, he's down one hand. He's down one hand. It takes its toll. I love that pack. It's my favorite backpack.
I did love when he dildo punched that stone skin walker. That was pretty good.
I'll break it. You stab it.
Mm-hmm.
So Rick and Michonne continue to make their way to the honeymoon cabin. While they're enjoying themselves, a shadowy figure sneaks up and quietly undoes all the tripwires they've set up to protect the cabin.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I do know how she found them. I don't know that any of this makes sense, but I guess we got to wait on that because we're not quite at that scene yet. But yeah. Did you think this was Jadis when she undid the fence here or the tripwires?
I thought it would either be Jadis or Father Gabriel. Because I didn't know, I hadn't fully put together that this is supposed to be Yellowstone. They never say it is. And I'm like, I wonder how far they've made it. They've had a scene driving through the mountains. Maybe they're closer to, you know, they're really close to Alexandria. But no, they haven't made it really that far across the country. So, like I said, my bet was either Gabriel or Jadis. You clocked it as Jadis right away?
No. I was kind of thinking it would, because it's such an implausibility that Jadis could follow them, that I kind of ruled it out. And so I was thinking, oh, is this some other shadowy figure who stalks the mountain forests or something? And I didn't know who it was.
I was wondering if Rick had like some kind of RFID chip that they had inserted and they were using something you can track once you get like a quarter mile away or something.
They put it in his dildo hand.
I bet on something he couldn't take off.
Yeah, fair.
But
it's on something he wouldn't take off.
Yeah, true. Not around Michonne. So they talk about, you know, whether they think those guys would have made it, that, you know, they kind of rightly observe that it's kind of hard to believe that they made it this far. But, you know, here they get one old snare and they're going to go down swinging. Rick finds a bottle of Johnny Walker undisturbed in the Ranger's cabin. And they talk about how it felt good to be out there working again, saving the world. And she observes that he's up to something. And he says, I'm just working with what I got. Presents her the gold necklace. Escorts her to the bed.
Toothpaste before or after the booze? It's a tough choice.
I'd go after, because that toothpaste is going to destroy the taste. What taste that booze has, it's going to be destroyed. Completely changed to soda powder and spearmint. But I also couldn't help but notice when they're going through the bed that the fist is looming large in the foreground.
You know,
it's Chekhov's the cock beater, I guess.
I guess so.
So as, like I said, shadow figure approaches and we flash back 3 years ago to Father Gabriel gathering holy water by a little stream next to Alexandria.
Okay, this is my first example of dialogue that I really hated that was cringy. Jadis walks up, And he sees Jadis and she says, "It's okay. I'm alone." And every bit of dialogue that I'm going to utter takes about 4 seconds per line to play out. They really make a meal out of this stuff. So it's okay. I'm alone. And we pan over to Gabriel. Is it okay? Even if you are alone? God, that's such bad, just garbage dialogue, man.
Is it? Is it terrible?
Yeah, I hate it. Is it okay even if you are alone? A, because like I said, it takes forever for them to say it. And they're playing it up like it's a big thing. But it's just like, it's characters doing a call and response constantly this episode. And it always feels like it, too. It never feels like this is natural dialogue. No one would ever say, "Is it okay even if you are alone?" They'd be way more suspicious of her. I don't know.
Well, so like my head, and I don't know if this is true or not, but my headcanon is the first time we see Father Gabriel with the helicopter. That's actually 4 years ago when he meets her for the first time. So this is the second time they've met, and it's established that it's dangerous for her to come out here. That she's so. I think it's like I interpret this as like that being a like him continuing the conversation they had last time, where she's like, "It's okay, I'm alone," and he's like, "Well, is it okay?" Yeah, but yeah, it's not Shakespeare, that's for sure.
I don't know. I can't imagine someone saying it like this ever. They would just say, "Is it?" or "Are you?"
They had this philosophical debate where he reveals that he's been searching for her with Eugene's radio, and that Rick had made her a space there, proving that she's a good person. And she's like, "Well, I was up to something the entire time. So you guys were right to not to trust me. You're wrong to trust me. And it shows that your kind of system doesn't work." And
yeah, Rosita was helping Gabriel. I don't remember this. Rosita was helping Gabriel try and find Jadis using the radio.
I think this is new information. I think this is him elaborating on the Father Gabriel stuff that didn't make it to the main series.
Why would Rosita ever do that?
Well, they didn't say Rosita. Like, they said Eugene.
No, using Eugene's ham radio. Rosita was the one helping him. Why would Rosita help him? That's like he's the one who's weirdly all about like repentance and forgiveness and shit. The other characters rightfully hated Jadis.
Yeah, but so like consider this. Consider that Rosita has lost her lover. Like she got with Sadiq and then he died. And, you know, her like Eugene's trying to find his. Maybe it's just like she just got caught up in the spirit of helping people make their connections, you know, because Father Gabriel and Anne, when she was going by Anne, were always, were not always, but they were an item. And they kind of rekindle it halfway this episode. But he thinks that the failure was his losing faith in her. And he asked her to forgive. And she says, "How do I forgive myself for all the blood I've shed in the name of my mission?" And he tries to tell her that you can talk to me because we got clergy confidentiality and doesn't really go anywhere.
And this is him, you know, doing his Gabriel thing where he tries to give people the benefit of the doubt and find forgiveness for them and talk them into a better way of life.
He's like, "Got the canteen. I got this holy water. Got this Bible. Mm-hmm. Wearing this collar. Could take confession right now."
I mean, the biggest revelation in this entire scene is that Jadis has had this haircut for over 3 years, and not once has she decided, you know, that was a mistake.
I gotta say, it looks better when it's not freshly shaved. When when it literally doesn't look like a reverse tonsure, it looks quite a bit better.
You know what this is? This is Pollyanna McIntosh realizing, shit, this is my last episode. I can start growing my fucking hair back out. She's actually... No, I'm not doing this scene. I'm not reshaving my head for this scene. I have to go in public tomorrow.
Yeah. It definitely softens the look. It makes it not nearly as extreme. So back in our time, Jadis wakes up Rick and Michonne at gunpoint and explains how she's dealt with her divided loyalty to both Alexander and his CRM up to this point before she tries to kill them because she needs them to understand.
Good Lord. Yeah. So they have to, they can't actually show, not tell here. They decide to just tell, not show, how Jadis found them. how she tracked them. And I guess it makes sense, but it's just done so poorly. Like, just, oh, she's going to come in here and James Bond style tell them everything about herself and her plans and how she found them and, like, just kill them. Like, what is it? I know, look, she killed somebody in the past and she didn't get a chance to say some unsaid shit to that person. I don't actually even know who she's talking about here.
Yeah, so this is where I got that deep dive in the Jadis that I did like two episodes ago. She's referring to something that happened in the world beyond. Where
okay, then
she,
who cares?
Yeah. So it's good. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, nobody's watching that show either. So I don't know. I didn't see it, and she's talking about like, oh, I can't do that again. I gotta tell Rick and Michonne how I feel before I murder them. It's all just so contrived.
Yeah, it's the whole divided loyalties. It's hard to believe that she cares about Alexandria, but maybe she does in the form of Father Gabriel. Like, the thing is, that's the thing. I don't believe in the character of Jadis. She's just too all over there. She comes across as crazy. She comes across as crazy in this episode, but not in crazy in a way to get to, like, a decorated officer in some kind of military. She's just, like, literally... like brain chemistry unstable, kind of. I don't know. Paranoid, schizophrenic. I'm not sure exactly what, but she had these massive personality shifts and changes, and she doesn't seem stable in this episode. So it's like that's the thing. It's like nothing about her character seems consistent. She's pulling on a backstory that if you were a person that just came back to the show because you're like, hey, I just want to see how Rick and Michonne ended up, you're not going to get. And it's half the episode is her wrestling with this. I believe in a CRM and I've got so much sunk cost fallacy into the blood that I've shed that I have to believe in a CRM. But I also still love Father Gabriel and wish I was the type of person that could fit into that environment.
Sure. And yet she's willing to kill Rick and Michonne here.
Yeah, once you said her piece and they understand, so they can understand that they, like, she respects them enough that she wants to say, hey, this isn't a defeat. You guys won bigger than you possibly could have ever. You know,
because Alexandria is going to stay Alexandria.
Be safe under the auspices of the CRM. And when they save the world, their children will benefit. So,
I don't like the logistics of this scene, I guess, either, or the specifics of it, because she... Jadis, you know, has to get her word in here and tell them how she found them. And she makes them tie themselves up on the bed before she does this, which, okay, good on her. They're dangerous people. Tie themselves up. But then
she makes
when she
Rick
walks
tie
over,
himself to the bed. She did not make Michonne tie herself to the bed, which is the seeds of her destruction.
No. Yeah. And the other seed of her destruction is when she walks toward them to lean to hunch over this bed and tell them, here's how I found you. She kicks the axe. Intentionally, she kicks the axe.
Mm-hmm.
You would think she would kick it away. Like most people, when their enemy's gun is on the ground, they kick it away, right?
Right.
She kicks it towards Michonne.
Why
would you do that?
She wants her to take it.
Okay, sure. It's so stupid. It's just a bad insert shot.
Yeah.
And she gets an axe in the chest for it. So good.
So you think that because I think that her showing this seems to make sense that the Jadis, like first she hears that their plank chopper went down. She thinks, yeah, I bet. She signs up for the reclamation team, goes to see the wreckage, and there's no bodies. There's nothing but spiders in the helicopter frame. And she's, you know, it's like it's such a shock to see that Rick and Michonne are off the board that it like. In a trauma way, burns in the imprint of the scene, and she notices this bright yellow truck on the periphery, and she just can't get over it. So she sneaks away, steals an emergency vehicle, drives back, finds the building in ruins, and that truck is gone. There's dead delts everywhere, and she knows, you guys survived. So I think her deducing that they take the fastest route to Virginia is probably correct. It's the trail of the tasteful nudes that.
Sure.
Which did she stop by like every rest area, every gas station? if you were Rick and Michonne, would you camp at well-established places like that? Or like, you know, like they're seeing a sign for a hiking trail, going back there, finding a visit, going in the camp. It seems like it'd be a lot harder to track him down than what Jadis went through, especially since she's going from a several day, like giving him a several day head start.
Yeah, that's the thing. I do feel like it would take way longer because they just stop when they stop. She has to stop at every location looking for signs of them. So she would never catch up with them.
Right.
Yeah. But whatever. I thought it was plausible, if not, you know, contrived. Like I said, I think the whole scene is contrived.
Yeah. And like, how far do you explore? It's like, you know, like, this trail, maybe they're on the trail. Like, I don't know.
Or how far do you explore down the fastest route, right? The most direct route. Maybe they decided, well, they might look for us in the most direct route, so they took a different route. Does she go 1,000 miles down that road before she finds any sign of them and then says, I guess they're not here?
And her whole strategy would have been foiled if they hadn't got. So that's the other thing, is they kind of reframe the luck that Michonne and Rick have had as bad luck the whole entire time. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but
yeah, I suppose
the episode didn't do enough other good things for it to kind of rise above. So now we're flashback Gimple special, 2 years to the now annual meeting of Father Gabriel and Jadis. And this time, Father Gabriel gives her a ring that he intended for Rick, but he now gives it to her as a token of faith and love.
I really thought he was going to propose to Jadis by the end of this episode.
Yeah.
Rosita out of the way. Although I'm not sure if she would have been out of the way just yet, but by the end of the episode, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I thought this was a nice story too. It would have worked better if this was something that they established in the show, and we've been kind of waiting for, like, oh yeah, he's keeping this necklace as a token. But I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I give like all half points for any plot cleverness here, because they're literally just making things up. You know, these are things that we wanted to do this episode and this season. So we're going to have this flashback so we can set all this carefully stuff up so it will have meaning later. And that's just a hard way to generate genuine character moments that feel like long payoffs, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. I look back at shows that do this so well, which is like Breaking Bad. And okay, sometimes in Breaking Bad, they would plant those seeds. They would say, we want something to happen X amount of time from now, let's plant a seed here that we can use later. But most of the time, they were strip mining the past. They're not even doing that in this show.
Right.
Like, they're both creating the past in this episode and then strip mining it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the when he's referring to strip mining, he's talking about, like, the Villa Gang, Vince Gilligan, Peter Goulden, etc., all the writers, that they were such fans and close watchers of their own show that sometimes in later seasons they'd realize, oh, we had this throwaway thing in season two, or there was this weird prop in this guy's apartment, and we can use that to like build on something to the story. And again, they didn't intend that when they're doing it, but again, they are fans of their show and they're close watchers. They have a really good show historian and a script supervisor, and they were able to make those things feel organic even when they weren't. Whereas this is just a clumsy attempt to, like, we need A, B, and C to happen in sequence. We're just going to invent it all so we can get to D, you know, because we want to be at D.
Yeah, it's the same thing that they do with every character's death, except they're doing it with a character who's been on the show for 408 years. Like, they just create story that is poignant for them in that episode and then kill them off. Like, it's the telltale sign that a character is going to die is they get more characterization in the show.
And I am, you know, I think some of the stuff that Jadis here is saying would be more impactful if I cared more. Like, if Rick was saying this stuff, I would care more. But her talking about, like, you know, I'm just kind of a bloody-minded, violent fool, and that is really useful for the CRM. And now that I believe in the CRM, then I have found a purpose as well.
Gabriel asks her for food here. He's like, hey, our community is starving. We've never heard of fish. Can you guys get us some vegetables?
Yeah. Yeah, they're this. So this is obviously right after the Whisperer's War, when the walls have been breached, mm-hmm. and we know that they were in pretty dire straits. You know, that led to the whole Hawatchening of everything. Jade is turning him down cold, is pretty cold blooded. You know.
Yep.
But also, she's telling him, like, this is par for the course. This is what I do. I make big, giant decisions that decide the fate of many to protect my community. And it's everything I've done is worth it as long as that community stays protected. And like I said, I like the story about Rick asking him to marry. And, you know, Father Gabriel at this point in time is not really feeling the future and he's feeling despair. But then he has this religious moment where he's, you know, kind of talking with God on a log. He sees this wedding ring miraculously at his feet and he picks it up and resolves to give it to Rick once the bridge is complete and the communities are connected so they can get married. And of course, that day never comes because Rick blows up that bridge in himself. And but he gives it to Jadis as a token of faith and love.
Yeah, I guess I just hate when all this stuff is explained rather than shown. I don't know. Characters explaining, like, I found this ring and it made me see the future that Rick had envisioned. Can I not see him experiencing that? Like, we've got a good actor here. Show him.
Yeah, how hard would it be to
things.
Do an insert shot of him, you know, like, because they're already
instead of having him spend 4 minutes here to explain what happened to Jadis, have him do this scene, or better yet, have him have done it, you know, 5 years ago when this episode aired.
So they can just show a flashback, yeah.
Right. You're listening to The Watching Dead. We'll be right back. Keep your head down. Welcome back to The Ones Who Live.
So Rick and Michonne explore their Georgia roots as they engage in good old-fashioned Dukes of Hazzard chase of Jadis through the dirt roads of a national park. Coo-coo-coo, they're in hot pursuit, Jim.
Yeah, off-roading in their EV.
They're going to have to probably jump a bridge that's washed out. It's going to really trigger Rick's bridge phobia. But Rick desperately tries to calm Michonne down so they can take Jadis alive, while Jadis tries to recruit Big Red and his family of idiots to help her escape.
You're tall. Truck chase, not all that bad. Not all that bad. I had fun with that one, especially when she screams fuck as she's going over the edge there. Pretty good.
It was very Dukes of Hazzard, and I guess that's how, like, there's, you know, they kind of showed the way to do an off-road dirt road, gravel road kind of chase, and cutting through the brush and trying to head each other off and eventually taking them down the pit maneuver. I like it. Just some good old boys. Never meaning no harm. And I guess a girl. So good old girls and a boy.
Yeah. I was sort of curious why she turns off on that little side excursion, because she seemed thrilled to be behind them, because I guess she's going to ram them and spin them and flip them, whatever. But then she takes this little cut off the road. She's following them, and then she dives off the road here. And I don't know if she thought this was a shortcut or, like, what incentive does she have to?
I thought she's trying to break contact. Like, if she can, like, now she's got them where they're on the run from her, and as they're accelerating away, she can take advantage, like, hairpin, go through the woods, lose them, get back to the jump point. Because she's got to lose them before she gets to the jump point. Like, they
just put her Rick right back knows, on the road.
Yeah, Rick knows where they're trying to go, where she's trying to go. They establish that. So it's like, I guess that's, she's trying to lose them. Ideally get them hung up, spun out, something to where they're on foot and she's on vehicle and she can get the upper hand. Because she's the other thing that I think they told successfully through this is that she's terrified of Rick and Michonne as a unit. Like, she thinks she could take Rick or Michonne, but she's, like, mythologied. She's turned the Rick and Michonne relationship into this, you know, legendary thing that can't be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
She's bought their own press, essentially. And Rick, for his part, is still believing that there's something. He's very Luke Skywalker. He sees that there's something of Anakin still buried some good left insider that they can reach. And he's like, I know that because I was in the same spot and you pulled me back. So maybe if they had Father Gabriel here, they might have something. But I don't think either of these two have a strong enough connection for her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess, yeah, they've simultaneously done too much with Jadis in this series and not enough because, yeah, if her and Rick had talked a lot more, I guess I might understand why he's concerned about bringing her back from the brink. But like four times now, she's betrayed this group and she's tried to kill them all. Why would Rick still tolerate this and be trying to save her?
I understand why he's trying to save her is because he firmly believes that if she dies, all of Alexandria.
Oh, sure,
dies.
Sure.
So
but redeem her is the question. Like, why is he thinking, oh, she can be redeemed?
And the thing is, I felt like that they could have maybe done something with, like, you know, Shane has haunted me. If only I had done a little bit something different or a little bit sooner. And, you know, like, I just don't want to give up on something. Like, they could have done something, but they didn't. Like I said, it tracks that he doesn't want her to die. It just kind of, it strikes me as kind of like a fool's hope. That's like, well, we'll get her, we'll take her alive, and we'll convince her that it's in her best interest to let us go and be on our way and not
fuck
with Alex.
Yeah, he doesn't
know that
Father Gabriel tried for 3 years.
Right. Well, and 3 days, I guess set up some kind of success, although I don't know. We'll talk about that when we get there. So yeah, as they're musing about this, they come up upon this another visitor center, I suppose, where there's this kind of like shanty town set up, this like makeshift dormitory, maybe a medical center, and they see a bloody handprint on the entryway, so they know Jadis is in there.
It looks like one of those kind of libraries of wildlife, like almost a museum sort of thing, right? Where they have a bunch of taxidermied animals, a bunch of plants in here. But they've kind of hollowed out all of these stalls that would house displays, and now they're just set up as beds and cots for the sick, I guess.
It's all abandoned, and they see what they think is Jadis at the heart of it, and it turns out it's just a very tall sister wearing Jadis's overcoat. And suddenly it's 4-on-2.
Well, kind of. The three of them amount to maybe one. This is the second time they get the drop on these idiots, and they all die for it. Good riddance.
It's funny because Jadis is gloating. She's like, it's 4-on-2, Rick. People are a resource. Like, wait, aren't you the group that kills all the strong people? Like, what kind of misallocation of resources is this anyway? Yeah. And just as she's doing this, as she's kind of gloating, that Rick and Michonne just easily disarm these two, just as they did before. And then the sister gets eaten by the concrete zombies, and they get eaten trying to save her. It's a mess. Now Jadis, now it's 2-on-1. She fires a Rick and Michonne. They go scrambling, which introduces us to another flashback to 1 year ago. Father Gabriel and Anne meet up for what turns out will be the final time. She disarms him and puts a gun on him, calling Gabriel a loose end.
Yeah, I feel so bad for Seth Gilliam and Pollyanna McIntosh. I'm sure she's a fine person, but they give them the hardest dialogue. I mean, it's George Lucas levels of dialogue here. An exchange between them goes like this. I know you feel you can't tell me, but you can. And again, four seconds minimum between each of these lines. I know you feel you can't tell me, but you can. I'm here. That's what Gabriel says. And then Jadis responds, I can't. And if I can't, I'm not here. And then Gabriel responds, no, you are. And that exchange takes about a minute and a half. And I just, kill me, man. I hate the dialogue in this show.
You're saying it's George Lucas in dialogue, but, you know, he always had the direction to go with it, faster, more intense. This is slower, less intense. So it's just...
it's slower and more intense, which makes it more laughable, is the thing. Like, they're saying it with all the intensity of Shakespeare and its Tiny Toon Adventures. It's garbage, man.
Yeah, you're supposed to take it with the grain of salt that, like, these two people used to be lovers. As the years go by, clearly Jadis is getting more and more trauma collected, but she's doubling down because she thinks, you know, the more blood she spills, the more she's kind of wed to the CRM, and Gabriel's trying to help her remember what it was like when things weren't that kind of high strung and high stakes, and they kiss. They end up kiss, and he tries to get her to come back, and you know, he said, she pulls the gun on him, and I think this happens in a later, because they're going to kind of break this up many times, but he finally exasperates and is like, well, just shoot me, because I don't understand who you are, and I need you to show me for me to believe it. Just challenging him to kill her.
Just shoot me.
I'm here, do it, you know?
Yeah, come on, Walking Dead. You've been threatening to do this for 12 years now. Just shoot me.
Meanwhile, in the present, Rick and Michonne are negotiating with Jadis. Rick and Michonne persuade her to take back the original deal, which is Michonne goes free and Rick returns to the CRM. But as soon as Michonne leaves, Jadis betrays Rick, to the surprise of no one, including Michonne, including Rick, including Jadis. Like, this was a very dumb scene to play out.
Well, Jadis is an idiot in this scene. I don't know if it's the blood loss. She can't think straight. She's, you know, half dead here. But, I mean, she knows that immediately when she lets Michonne out of her sight, Michonne is doubling back to get in behind her, right? She has to know that.
They're a fool if not, because, like, even as Michonne is trying to play this straight, like, she's having this realization of, okay, you finally broken us. You finally proved that we can't be together. They can't help but, like, put enough in a performance that we know it's a joke. And there's also no way Michonne would ever. So it's like everything we know says this is a joke. Jadis knows him very well, too. She should know that this is a. And yeah, like,
it just makes her look really stupid.
I've seen situations like this where I actually am taken in. I'm like, oh, my God, this person's had a change of heart and it's going to change everything. I'm not even close to having that reflex in the scene.
No, so, but. That's the thing. I don't begrudge a show for doing some obviously false acting. There's a scene earlier in the episode where Jadis is talking with Gabriel, and Gabriel says, you know, Rick died on the bridge to help us all, and she goes, oh, Rick's dead? And it's so obviously fake. I mean, she knows he's not dead. So, But they have to convey to the audience that she knows, but they also have to make it so that Gabriel doesn't go, wait a second, you said that weird. Did you know that Rick wasn't dead? So I don't begrudge a show for doing that.
Yeah.
I do begrudge a show for having a character know exactly who these other people are, claiming you guys are dangerous and unstoppable and I have to kill you for it, and then getting duped by those characters without even considering that they might be dangerous and unstoppable.
They make it seem like the Jadis is caught between, like, cognitive dissonance here, because she's saying something like, the reason you guys are the downfall of you is because you're just like each other. You only look out for yourself. But we know that from the flashbacks and our own experience with Jadis, is she knows that's not true about Rick, that Rick does look out.
And she's relying on that not to be true
for this
plan to work, right?
Right. And I think you're supposed to understand all that she is essentially trying to maintain a worldview that's crumbling around her. She's trying to get to the point where she can forgive Rick and let, you know, because when she, I mean, that's the other thing, I guess, too, is that, well, I don't know. We should probably, we're not even at that scene yet. She's at this point, just got Rick at gunpoint. She's betrayed him instantly. And she said, the only reason I went along this deal is because I. So this reframes it as Jadis knew that they were intended to betray her, but she knew that she had to get him separated at some point and to kill them individually. But she also makes this offhand thing about Michonne getting a med kit, which almost seems like, to your point, I think you said something that, like, this feels like an episode that was written and finalized before they had gotten some other details, because. Yeah, she's not, her thing wasn't to go get a med kit and come back to save Jadis. I took her as putting her weapons down and leaving for Alexandria. and Rick was going to stay there.
That was supposed to be the plan.
Yeah, so like that felt like it was like from a different episode. What was it? And the other thing you said,
I think maybe she was going to come back and patch her up. I can't be sure because they have to also make sure she doesn't die. Is the other thing.
Yeah, but they didn't establish that. Like Michonne's going to get the med kit, right? And I'm going to stay here with Jadis, or did they?
Maybe, I'm not sure.
Anyway, I thought that there was a couple signs of some things that didn't quite hook up in the final situation, but maybe I missed something. We flash back to her having Father Gabriel at gunpoint, and again he demands to be shot so she can finally see who she really is. And in the present, Michonne double crosses Jadis, who ends up fatally bitten by the walkers. Jadis, now finally defeated, reveals that the struggle she's been going on in her heart for the past few years, and asks them to spare the CRM, but Michonne doubles down and says she's coming for the CRM. Mm-hmm. And then with that echoing in her ears, Rick blows her brains out, ending her story.
Thank God. I want to say there's no chance she comes back, but that's not true. There's always a chance. Like, Gabriel could flash back. He could be in the next episode. He could have a love scene with Jadis. He could be ghost style. He could be like behind her with a shaver, just shaving her head into that haircut.
To Unchain Melody.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Their hands are in clay. I don't know. Their feet are in clay, even worse.
My best guess is this is done. Like, I don't think Jadis. I think Jadis is done. I'm kind of wondering if The Walking Dead is done. When I look at the public reception to this, like, of course, it's not finished yet. And I don't know. I also don't know what the live plus three numbers are and whether AMC is happy with the AMC plus action they're getting or
That's
the deal
the
with. I don't know. I just know the raw numbers that are being reported, and it doesn't seem like this has been the shot in the arm that the AMC execs have hoped for. But it does feel like this is, you know, that they've got the Daryl thing still going on. But like, I don't know that they greenlight another Rick and Michonne. Like, it feels like they're going to need to after this series is done.
Kind of does, which, you know, that's what I was on about with the season one stuff. But like, I just don't want to watch it. I don't want to watch it. If it's going to be this quality, I'm not interested.
Because to be clear, we're talking about either doing another Ones Who Live miniseries, which I don't think they're going to get. Like, I've always been skeptical of them being able to get Danai and Andrew back together again after this. But the other logical thing is to continue with The World Beyond, where you know, get Terry O'Quinn on there, and you've already got Locke. And you, like, so Rick and Michonne are then shadow characters that are like the leaders, you know, they're mentioned, you see them in posters, they're whispered about, but you never see them. And it tells the downfall of it's. But the problem with that story is they did that. That's the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth was you had an independent press. You took them some information. Mm-hmm. It shocked the sensibilities of the citizens, robbed them of their popular support. And then I don't see that being as effective here. The Commonwealth was not led well by their governor. It seems like the CRM is just way more organized, way better equipped. And I just don't know that, 100,000 people is what we're talking about that can rise up and over 200,000 people can rise up and over, like, the CRM could just take off, set up their base somewhere else, or they could firebomb, they could gas bomb their own city, start over.
They've got a history of destroying cities about the size of this one. So why wouldn't they just do that?
Right. Like, there's also evidence that they're in cahoots with the French, the Fifth Republic.
Sure.
So maybe they're thinking that we join authoritarian regimes and we start over. I don't know. But like, again, I'm not going to go watch another the World Beyond with Locke and
You haven't impressed me enough to watch a season two of this, let alone go watch a whole other spinoff that we're a third of the way through that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
So no, there's no chance I'm engaging in any more of this. They need to wrap this up, but it doesn't feel like they can at the same time, at least not believably. I guarantee they can. They can just have Rick and Michonne go back, destroy the file, kill Beale, release the information, and then the people just rise up, right? And everything is happily ever after. But, like, it's not going to be believable.
Especially since it seems like Rick Michonne sees the truth of the CRM maybe being able to save something, but not unless they change, and it can't change without Rick and her working together. So are they talking about like Alexander occupying the CRM? Are they going to be the ones on, are they going to replace General Beale? It's a lot to do in one single episode.
Yeah.
And I guess that's an interesting end point for the Rick and Michonne to be like the king and queen of the Civil Republic.
Okay. Yeah.
But again, it's a lot to happen in a single episode.
I was just overjoyed that Jadis is dead. I can't tell you. Like, we're so close to my end of ever caring about The Walking Dead again. I'm kind of glad she got her comeuppance. I wish it was better than this. Like, that's the story of The Walking Dead. I always wish it was better than this, but like, I just didn't want her to survive this because I hate that character so much.
She got half eaten by zombies. I mean, that's a pretty grisly way to go, I suppose. I mean, it's not as bad as some of the people getting eaten alive, but
it's terrible because they just give her like 4 or 5 minutes of screen time to go on and on about who she wants to be and all this shit about flashbacks and I wish I died an artist and fuck you, just die. I was like, the entire episode,
you could have died
the entire scene
back in the Armageddon and then you would have saved everybody all this trouble and bad haircuts,
right? This entire scene I'm just thinking, I don't care, just kill her, just, she's already dead, just let her die, just shut her up. This character that no one has ever liked and has been written like a psychopath the entire show, and you're trying to make me care about her in less than an hour? It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and they tried to, I thought it was a good way to go to explain that this was all motivated by her grieving the losses of her previous communities, and they flash back to her, you know, feeding all the trash people, the zombie trash people into the grinder
the
because
blood
of the
chipper,
end.
Yeah.
They flash back to, you know, I guess the ties she made to Alexandria. And she's like, I was torn between these two worlds where it's like Schrodinger's grief. I could destroy either one of my old community or new community, but I couldn't have them both. And I tried to, like, you know, limp upon these two lame legs and now it's killed me. I thought that was pretty good. But the crucial flaw is no one cares, you know.
Yeah, nobody cares. It's been what? When did she come to the show? Season 3? Season 4? Yeah. I mean, it's been like 10 years.
Let me ask you this. Would it have been better if they'd made this around Morgan? Because we know Morgan's kind of like mentally fragile and he's easily swayed. Could the CRM have lured him under progress of bringing back humanity and making his son and daughters and wife sacrifice meaningful, and Rick and Michonne have to talk him down off the ledge? Like,
I don't think so. Because Morgulizing,
he's already,
is a thing. The way that Walking Dead tells their story breaks every single character in time, because
it's like acid.
If they don't do the single episode where they get all their characterization and then they get killed, they drag their stories out so long that they have to make them flip-flop 9 different times. Be the bad guy, be the good guy, clear, don't clear. And by the time you get to the end of that journey, you just don't give a shit anymore. You throw your hands up and say, I don't care about this, because the story is so convoluted. And that's what it's been the entire time, and never worse than with Jadis.
I really liked the flashback where they showed her doing her naked metalworking. You know, she's just like except for like an apron, and she's like welding metals. I forgot like how fucking crazy things got at the trash heap.
I thought her hair was bad back then, and it almost looks good by comparison.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, actually that haircut, that's not as bad as I remember.
So we flash back at this point to Gabriel, where she reveals that she kills the walker that was sneaking up behind them, and tells him to go. And he said, you came to me to find an answer, and you just found it. See you next year. And she references that, you know, the Gabriel had already showed me this was my path, but I didn't want to walk it or some shit. And she reveals where the dossier is and says that they've got their blessing to go find it, destroy it, and go home. Just spare the CRM. And Michonne, like Rorschach, looks down and whispers, no.
Yeah, she's out for blood. They're going to go back. They're going to destroy the dossier, destroy the CRM, and go back to Alexandria.
It's wild that Michonne is on this path that, like, we do have to reform the CRM, actually. We do owe it to our children, actually. We have to... I've seen the full scope and grandeur of what I'm facing, and I see how badly it brainwashed and bushwhacked my husband, but I want to go back. I want to go back to do the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What are the options? I guess they go back, destroy the document, and then go back to Alexandria. They have to go back either way to the CRM.
But I guess they would do, they'd sneak back and destroy it. Because the thing is, it's at the... It's
at the Cascadia base, you're right.
Because that's the thing.
The new outpost.
I don't believe that they could break back into Philadelphia and go to her private quarters. And I do kind of believe that they could infiltrate the Cascadia base, destroy that, and get away. And my question is, I don't... Mm-hmm. What I was missing is Michonne's development. Like, why? Like, they almost want me to believe that when she was fake talking this plan over with Rick, that she was being convinced by it. And I just don't buy that. I don't know why Michonne would suddenly be like, we have to get across the country, and within sight of our hometown, we're going to divert, go up north to Philly and wreck shit.
It's the thing, man. I feel like the plots and the dialogue are not good enough to support the changes in character that they want to do. And so it never comes off feeling right.
And like, yeah, now that I know that this doesn't seem like it's going to any kind of resolution, but asterisk, they might come up with some kind of resolution. It's like, where are they going with this? You know, like Fear's wrapping up if it hasn't wrapped up already. I thought The World Beyond had wrapped up. Like, what is Daryl Dixon, what is Dead City, what is The Ones Who Live doing? Is this just a farewell tour? Like, just, hey, you know, we left a lot of loose ends dangling by choice after Alexandria wrapped up, and we just gotta tie up all those loose, see if everybody, you know, they're just behind the scenes looking at the audience, seeing if everybody's still crazy for zombies, and, you know, I that's what it feels like. Yeah. This feels like just kind of stalling time, making content to see what works so that it can... figure out which content to make. It doesn't feel like a creative plan.
No, I'm with you. The landscape right now is everybody is trying to desperately make their streaming service viable long term, because there are so many now that you kind of have to. This is the time. You're either going to prove yourself now, or you're just going to die on the vine, on streaming. And what else is AMC going to put up to get people to subscribe to their streaming service, except for The Walking Dead? So this is them stalling. Yeah, stalling until they can find another property that is as successful as they want The Walking Dead to be. Yeah. So that they can keep their streaming service going. Because if they don't have it, they're dead. Like, you have to have a streaming service now.
They had time, especially when they converted this from a series of movies to a miniseries. And I don't know why they didn't take time to be like, okay, let's build something so if this works, we've got people. Because that's the thing. It's like, I would like to be excited for what's coming up next. But like, I don't like Daryl Dixon doesn't give us an offer. This is not giving us an offer. Like, let's say that I did love this, and I'm like, oh man, most successful franchise, they leave you with like wanting more. Like, oh, I got to know what this mystery is. Oh, I got to know what happens next. But like, these all feel like very safe ways, or they're trying to build the safe ways that, like, you know, things can be ended. But still, like, oh yeah, you know, this guy came to Daryl through a sea of zombies just because, and we're gonna leave it there. You know, I don't know. I'm just mystified at the post Walking Dead plan for The Walking Dead is.
Feels very unplanned like.
So, she gives Rick the ring and she reveals what Father Gabriel told her, which blows Rick's mind. But she's like, shh, I'm dying. We don't have time to get into this. And he shoots her in the face.
Mm-hmm. Done.
Has anybody seen Michonne? We'll be right back. Has anyone spotted Rick? We're back with The Ones Who Live. Have a later scene while they're waiting at the jump point for the CRM to arrive. Michonne says, I don't think you can change the CRM all by yourself, but together, anything's possible. At the same moment, at the present time, Father Gabriel, by his holy water collection point, waits for an Anne that will never come. And I thought that was reasonably poignant and Isolation. It's just, as you said, nothing else really kind of works. So, you know, Seth Gillum really selling that this guy's bummed out and it's something for us that we're kind of like laughing and celebrating. So,
yeah. Yeah. Good God, I couldn't care less about Jadis. Gabriel at one point tells Jadis, like, yeah, I'll see you next year unless I'm dead. And so this time around, I guess he knows what happened to her.
And then nice overhead final shot of her final resting place with just a small A to mark that the here's where her story ended, kind of ignominiously. I thought that was an interesting choice too. That was a nice little grace point. And there, we see that
drag her body out there and bury her along the creek bed, and then
I think so.
Seamlessly put all of the rock back so it looked completely undisturbed.
I didn't think it looked undisturbed. It looked to me like someone had made a mound there, and clearly they marked it. But idea is, okay, like, it shouldn't be seen from the air. And, you know, like, if a person fans out to look around, they shouldn't find her body.
I don't know. Apparently the helicopters from the CRM fly like 8 feet. So yeah. I think if they flew down this river, they would definitely see that rock.
But why would they? And so this is the biggest, part. Because I didn't hate this episode as much as you, because I don't hate Jadis as much as you. But I will say that the part that bothers me is, under no fucking circumstances do I believe that these people are going to be found with Jadis missing hundreds and hundreds of miles from where they were lost. Like, if Rick knows where the Cascadia base is, if he was missing, he would report there. He wouldn't drive, oh, I just tried to get back to Philadelphia. Like, if you don't think that they're going to kill Rick on the spot and Michonne on the spot, the fact that they're going to get in and get the echelon briefing as if nothing had happened is stupid for a city that is like obsessed with secrecy the way the CRM is.
Sure.
Like, they really haven't done enough with Beal to convince me that he loved Okafor so much that he was going to sell the farm for the Rick Grimes A when he's already got an A in lock. I just that's the thing. It's like, I'm depressed about this next episode because I can't imagine a scenario in which all the aims that they want to achieve. Or the other thing is, like, maybe they just get arrested on the spot. But, like, that's even worse because now Rick and Michonne have to start doing what they're doing in prison.
Yeah, start from a Negan place in Alexandria where you're just locked up.
The only thing I can think of is Rick convinces Locke to cover for them, to tell some bullshit story or to go along with it because of old time's sake. And I don't think there's that many old times. I think Locke was already freaked out about whatever the fuck they were trying to pull. And I can't see any way for them to execute the next part of the story, much less in an hour, even if it's a supersized 90-minute episode. So my greatest fear is that this
whole... They first have to go west.
Yeah, they got to go get back to the Cascade thing. Mm-hmm. So my greatest fear is this whole thing is going to feel like kind of a giant waste of time. Like, it's very strong that we're going to end this season exactly the same place we started, with Rick embedded with the CRM, with Michonne trying to figure out a way to get him out, and with the added complexity of taking down the entire CRM. There's no fucking way they can do that in a single episode, so... What was the point?
No, but they're going to. They're going to, and they're going to act at the end of this next episode like it was the most successful thing that's ever been committed to television, because that's what The Walking Dead does. The Walking Dead goes for the big moment, everything else be damned. They swell the music, they have characters look at each other and get misty-eyed, and they just kind of hope that people go along with it, or they expect people to go along with it. And I don't know if that's like what the fan base is now. The 500,000 people, the 400,000 that are still watching are just like the diehards who, no matter what you put on the screen, it's labeled The Walking Dead and they'll go with it. But I don't know. That stuff doesn't work for me. I need to feel emotionally connected to the characters, and I need to feel intellectually connected to the plot. Walking Dead is never, well, not never, but they've rarely done that for me. And it's been a long damn time since they really have.
Yeah, it's too bad, because like I said, I think a lot of the individual stuff they did, I think it was a great idea to get Danai and Andrew back together. I think their chemistry is intact. I wanted to see it happen. I was very happy to see it happen. But again, my greatest hope was that they were going to successfully adapt essentially three movies into six episodes. We're going to have no fat, no filler, all Rick and Michonne, hardcore action, relationship back on track. And what I'm getting is what I feel like I have been on a treadmill, and I'm about, you know, the tread is about to complete its original orientation. And what have we learned?
Yeah, they could have used this hour on stuff related to the CRM and Michonne and Rick, and instead they used it on a character that everyone has hated across the board. Like, I don't know anybody who ever took Jadis seriously as a character. And they spend an hour of what should be a premiere 6-episode run concentrated on her. And they spend another 20 minutes of the runtime in other episodes concentrated on her. Jettison her from this entire thing. Take that, reclaim that time, and do more work on your plot. Do more work on why I believe that the CRM needs to fall, why I believe that it could fall, why I believe Rick and Michonne need to do it in this moment rather than go back to Alexandria. There's so many other things they could have done with that time than service just a shit bottom tier character.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a waste.
The only thing I can think of is they trying to reward people who have watched The World Beyond.
So reward them in The World Beyond. Like, yeah. I don't want that. Like, I watched 12 years of The Walking Dead. I don't need that.
I don't know. If you watch The World Beyond, you must like Jadis, or she's like a popular character over there. So, but yeah, I don't know. Is this the end you wanted to see her? See for her, I don't know, because I'm not a Jadis fan.
So yeah, it's their obsession with building crossovers, building bridges to other shows to get more people to watch more shows. It's what it is, and it's cynical.
Yeah, that's the episode. I can only assume that the helicopter is going to come up to see the smoke at the LZ and see it's Rick and Michonne and just drop yellow gas on them, because that's what I think would make the most sense. But that's our episode for this week. We got one more to shamble through. What do we got for feedback, Jim? Before we get there, feedback is sent to twd@baldmove.com. TWD stands for The Walking Dead. twd@baldmove.com. You can follow us on all the social medias @baldmove. And finally, if you'd like to support us and doing what we're doing, we got a pretty good show, gun podcast to make up for this kind of terrible Walking Dead podcast right now. We're talking about Three Body Problem, hot new show on Netflix today on OTC, as well as some other things. It's a good time. Support.baldmove.com if you want extra content, more Bald Move content, and ad-free feeds. All right, Jim, you opened up the TWD mailbag. Mm-hmm. You said, woof.
Yeah, you might not have been able to tell, but I'm kind of over this show, and especially this episode. So when I looked in the feedback, all I saw was a lot of complaining about last episode, which is fair. There were things to complain about last episode, but only a single feedback about this episode. So I'm just going to do that. I can't be bothered to go back and relitigate last episode. Okay. I'm just going to go with Jamie's email for this latest episode.
Let's see what Jamie has to say.
Jamie says, this series should have been a movie. So much filler, backfilling via flashbacks. I lost count of how many this week and could feel Aaron's reaction at each. The multiple lengthy makeout sessions per episode. It's the penultimate episode, and I still don't know the purpose, intention, or goal of this series, nor do I trust they'll get there in 45 minutes. Saying they checked the runtime for episode 6. Apparently it's just 45 minutes. All right.
Oh my God. It's a short episode?
Sub 1 hour, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Cares about the echelon briefing at this point? What could it possibly contain that makes sense of the CRM's approach to killing almost everyone they interact with? Why develop Thorne's character at all? How can they deliver on as many carrots as they've dangled in the finale? Love to hear your guys' thoughts on what this series could have been and appreciate the coverage. I love zombie content and wish the universe hadn't gone so downhill. I'm glad to have Bald Move to reactionally bitch with. Oh, and bitch I did this week.
Here's the thing. I disagree. I think there are ultimate Omega plans a CRM could come up with that I would think is interesting and would work. They've set up a situation where I don't think Rick could possibly get this echelon briefing. Maybe they'll have something. No, I don't think so. I can't believe that
saves a pack of tasteful nudes for Beale.
Yeah, and that's just gonna, the savory Unami flavor is going to open his eyes, and it's gonna be Ratatouille's harshest critic. He's gonna be transported back to his childhood and know
his
how to
college days, right? Can you imagine the last time he's had instant ramen? It's gotta be college.
So
nostalgic as hell.
Because the obvious play is the CRM is experimenting to reverse the zombie plague. Mm-hmm. And the destruction of Omaha and Portland, these are all failed attempts. And that the idea that they might be looking for another settlement to test this stuff out. And maybe Alexander's that. Like, I think there could be a hook that's like, okay, that is something I could see. It's like, you know, if you could end the zombie plague, like cure it so that when people die, they don't come back. Like, that is what you probably need to rebuild humanity proper. To get a new start. And I could see a lot of people willing to grind whatever grist for the mill to accomplish that, because if not, you're just slow walking humanity's extinction. But again, I don't even know if that's the plan. Like, that would explain why the zombies are mutating, why they're experimenting on them, why they have to destroy cities inexplicably because a whole bunch of super zombies are running around now because of the failed experiment. But, like, again, I cannot imagine why you would give Rick the Echelon briefing. He, like, if anything, Beale has said, I'm watching you, Grimes. You act weird or step out of line or do something crazy, it's going to be over. And the first time he gets off to the base with this new Dana lady, he goes AWOL for, like, a week. They recover him in Yellowstone Park. After their reclamation officer went mysteriously missing under mysterious circumstances. It's just, what the fuck? Why would anyone give the Echelon briefing to him? Except for maybe
Locke,
if she has been, if Rick can disillusion her with the Civil
Thorn
Republic.
I was wondering who you were talking about when you said Locke, because Locke is Beale's, you know, Terry O'Quinn's character from Lost. I thought you were talking about him. I was very confused.
Okay, thank you, because I wasn't making veiled references to Locke's character and to O'Quinn's characters. Yeah, I thought it was Locke this whole time. Like, oh, that's kind of on the nose. Yeah, Thor. If they can beat the Echelon out of her or appeal to her humanity, but
yeah, maybe.
But then I don't know how then you're talking about as a hostile force invading Philadelphia, getting to their newspaper people, I guess, the reporters, I think, is the plan, and revealing. I don't know, man. It seems stupid.
I buckle in, because I'm pretty sure that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to give Rick the Echelon briefing. He's just going to go public with it, and the city is going to turn against the CRM. And whether they just, you know, walk out not looking at the populist uprising explosion as it goes off behind them and they just turn back to Alexandria, I don't know, or if they stick around to deal with the aftermath. But that's kind of seems how it's going to happen. And The Walking Dead does not care about how much sense that makes. They just do it because that's the track they're on.
I just think they really overestimate how much people will just want to keep the status quo going. Like, if Beale's like, this guy is a radical outsider agitator, we've given him every chance to get in, and no matter what we've done, we've lavished him training and attention, he's still kicking, he's trying to destroy our fair city with a bunch of lies and smears. I can't believe most of the citizenry of Philadelphia won't go along with that, because they're living in a city that's safe and secure. They know what it is like out there.
Yeah, the dude who's the director of the water, the waste management stuff, is going to be like, dude, I got a good job. I'm not eating ramen every night.
And it's not they're going to be okay. They're just not going to believe that. It's like, I don't understand that these writers inhabited the same planet we have for the last 5 years. People will sell out for a hell of a lot less than protection against literal flesh-eating demons and ice cream and air conditioning.
Absolutely, you're right. And a lot of the previous time with The Walking Dead, when they did stuff like that, I always felt like, oh, this is aspirational, right? They're trying to teach us how we should act, not how people actually act. And I mean, that is a pretty good cover. That's a good veil to put over it. But at some point, I just have to look at it and say, well, you're not dealing in reality. Like, both with the setup for this, I don't believe that these characters would react the way they do, and I don't believe, like, logistically any of this would work, but also the reaction to it. At some point, I just don't believe that you are trying to tell me a story that is aspirational. You're telling me the world as you think it is, not as it should be.
Yeah. And it always feels like the writer's a little, like, day late, dollar short to these kind of storylines in terms of, like, I kind of admired what they're doing with the Commonwealth, but it seemed kind of ham-fisted and... Mm-hmm. You know, relying on the leaders of the Silver Republic being corrupt and cruel and kind of dumb, you know, not very good at their jobs. And I guess one of the downsides of casting Terry Quinn is I don't believe that he's a fool, and they haven't presented him as a madman or a fool. They represent him as a serious man who's got that was fortunate to be handed a situation, the time, the materials, the resources needed to do something great, and I think he's going to do it. I don't think he's going to, like, if they have him be in, like, a cackling, you know, villain speech or talk about how the little people don't, it's going to play false. So it's like,
yeah, it's, you need a lot of time, because if he is a smart man, and I think, like you said, Terry Quinn brings a lot to this, I do think he will be able to counter a lot of the stuff that would cause an uprising from the population, right? He would be able to tell them, look at the life we have here. Mm-hmm. Look at the work we've been doing. This is what we're working toward. Get behind me. And who's this Rick guy anyway? You don't know him from Adam. Like, why do you give a shit what anybody says about that? We're trying to do something big here. And he could probably get most of the people on his side. And there would be this drawn out battle over the hearts and minds of the people, but they don't have time to do that.
Uh-huh. No, I totally agree. That's the biggest thing for me, is like, it just seems so easy to dismiss, like, these outsiders' accusations that have, you know, it's like that you could hang the murders of Okafor on them, and Jadis, and even probably Thorne if she gets killed, and that, like, you know, look at this guy, all of our metrics said that we should have banished this guy or executed him, but we gave him every chance, and this is why we do the things that we do, you know. It's like, make an example of him. It just, I don't see it. I certainly don't see it in 43 minutes, but...
No.
Yeah.
But you will see it. You will.
We're here to the chronicle of the Empire burn. Not necessarily. It's rebirth from the ashes, apparently.
Yeah.
So that's it for the podcast.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of The Walking Dead. We got one more, which is, I'm going to take as a promise, the last time. I feel like it's a promise that's going to be broken by the run during the runtime of the episode, but we'll see.
I saw how the last promise went in this show.
Yeah, and if we're ever really hurting for punishment, we've always got Dead City shambling around out there. But
man, this has really turned me off of doing Dead City. We were talking about, should we do it right after this? I don't know that we should do it.
Yeah, everybody's hyped. Because, like, yeah, we kind of assumed that this would be kind of a Daryl Dixon, where it's like, I like Daryl Dixon. It was mostly good. I liked season 9, 10, and 11. I think there's 2.25 really good seasons of The Walking Dead in there. This has, as really, really started to decompose as it's gone through its six episode run. So I don't know. We'll see. The last time. Maybe it's a promise. Maybe it's a filthy lie they're going to renege on instantly. We'll see. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.